Bink, the humble monster.
That part, look,
draws and shit in the background.
Yeah, but shit. Well, let me go ahead and get the intro out of the way because it's very rare I have guests. Most of everybody came up here has been friends of mine. I consider y'all like little bros to me, man, like for real family. So, everybody, this is Mikey Keys, the backbone of Dom Kitty, Nipsey Hussle, a shitload of other people, Casey Veggies, and start a new sound for Cali right now. Mike and Keith.
Thank you.
So what's the play since this pandemic? What's the play right now? Like, what we just, you still creating every day or how you on it?
Keep it real. We just been on them at the crib. I go to the studio once, twice a week, but we at the crib just creating, just ain't no other really options. Can't really be around too many people, so.
That part.
I be seeing people in the studio going big like it's not, the corona's not real, so I'm like, we ain't doing that.
Yeah,
this shit's goofy, yo. Like real shit. But at the same time, you know, it definitely gives you a chance to tap in, like really sit down and listen to samples, though, like, because you can't do shit else. So you like really listening to everything right now, like just going through. I was telling niggas, like, some people just listen to the intro. I'm like, man, this is the perfect time to let that shit play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I've always been that way when it came to samples. Like, some people just listen to that intro or the outro. But when you're dealing with vinyl, a lot of people don't know that the dark grooves in the record is the breakdown. You know what I'm saying? So you can go right to that on the vinyl of something, you know, something epic happening right here, some type of breakdown. That's why all the beginning of the record is always a dark groove. So when you're within the record, you see what I'm saying? So when you're within the record and you see that the lines get a little darker, that means some instrumentation is out. You know what I'm saying? So that make it fun to me anyway.
Wow, I never thought of it like that. Yeah, I mean, now crazy. Everybody can see the wave. That's so, the fact that, you know, you couldn't see the wave when you was doing it, you know? Like, right. Everybody can see the wave file and see where everything is at. That means you had to really know. That's a whole nother frequency. I remember when we used the vinyl and the people on, we did the Serato thing, Keith, what was it?
Oh, the master.
And they was like, man, take care of the vinyl. But I'm like, you know, we ain't really used to using a lot of vinyl. You know, we came we was in the beginning stages of the YouTube era.
Yeah.
Right.
So we was digging on YouTube when it, you know.
But you gotta understand, though, like, quality-wise, like, you, of course, you got, hold on 1 second. My food just got here. 1 second, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
I seen you chewing too much.
He said what?
I think he said I see you chewing too. Like, you eating something.
Oh, I already ate.
Y'all! When I seen you chewing, I was like, man, my shit on the way.
What'd you order, Bink?
Man, I'm on this detox right now, right? So I just got baked chicken.
Lettuce, and he on a lettuce diet.
Well, I call it rabbit food. I'm eating rabbit food right now, bro. But no, what were we just talking about? I lost my train of thought. Yeah, remember?
The sample game.
Oh, yeah. So listen, YouTube is MP3s, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't have a 320 MP3, then the quality is super thin, right? Yeah. So when you sample it from the vinyl, it just makes the sample so much heavier. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. That's why it's super important just to have a regular turntable and a DJ mixer in your spot going into your DAW. Not a digital turntable. You know what I'm saying? Not that type. Get a real turntable. You know what I'm saying? A real DJ mixer, and then go into your Apollo, straight into your Apollo. You see what I'm saying? And the signal is just so much heavier. Like, it'll blow you away. Like, it's a big difference than just sampling the MP3. So we always wanted to sample from the vinyl. If we couldn't find the vinyl, then the CD was up next. If you couldn't get the CD, then YouTube, you know, we'll set up for the YouTube. But for the most part, the vinyl and the CD was like the first two choices.
Right. Nah, you can definitely tell the difference when you sample. Yeah,
for sure.
It's like, it is thin. It don't sound the same as sampling from actual vinyl.
Yeah, you got to go in and hit them knobs. Like EQ on that shit.
We remember when we first moved to L.A., remember Keys Lonnie, he had took all the records and from vinyl and had did chopped, and we was trying to get him because he wasn't using them. He was like, nah, bro, I went and found the record, chopped it, put it on vinyl. Yeah. I'm not giving you this.
Yeah, he's like, y'all gotta dig. You gotta dig. Digging the crates.
that's when we really got a bar and start trying to figure out, like, you know, go look for, you know, obscure shit without, you know, asking anybody.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing is because the sample packs came out allegedly to make it easier for us to clear. You know what I'm saying? And then people just started getting super greedy and just throwing extra antics in there. So it's like, you might as well just keep sampling from records and stuff. You know what I mean? To be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. They want money. They want clearance, you know what I'm saying? They want publishing. So, like, what's the difference here?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's everybody's then got so greedy with seeing, you know, everybody has took away, like, let's just say, hey, Bink, we'll give you a real example. Bink has a relationship with 2 Chainz. Bink made the beat, but he used the loop, and you want to split everything down, and Bink chopped the sample, did a lot of work.
Yeah.
And you want to split everything down the middle. And then you want it to say produced by you too. When it's like, if you sample Marvin Gaye, it's not gonna say produced by Marvin Gaye
at all. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, I don't get it. So I'm like, you know what? I'm sticking to my records. Y'all keep y'all sample packs. The ones I use so far, that's out there so far. Okay, cool. So be it. But I stopped even looking in the folders. To be honest with you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, no, I'm sticking to my records. That's what seems to keep me separate anyway. You know what I mean? Going to them sample packs, it's like, you fuck around, play a sample pack, somebody be like, oh, you have to that same sample. Like, no.
Yeah,
no.
And you know what? We went through that. That's happened to us. So that's what made us be like, nah.
Hey, that ain't it. You know what I mean? I don't want what everybody else got at all on no day. You know what I mean? But I told y'all, shit, 3-4 years ago, I said, bro, y'all got a sound. You know what I'm saying? When we first started doing the Nipsey shit, and I was like, y'all niggas got a sound. And these niggas gonna get you like they got me. I said, yo, because I know when I hear it. You know what I'm saying? And I heard what made
now you. You was telling us in the vibe. I remember when we was in the vibe building the studio with you, like, man, listen, man. You kept telling me and Keys, you like, this right here, whatever this sound y'all doing right here, stick to that. Don't get out the pocket.
Don't leave. Don't abandon. This is y'all right here.
You know, we was getting confused on how to create because, you know, with the, you know how it is, big, you know, with the industry shit gets involved, that shit can fuck off your creativity.
Yeah, if you allow yourself to get jaded, that's why I just wanted to be that parakeet on y'all's shoulder. Like, no, nigga, stay here. Like, I don't care what the industry talks about, what they doing. You niggas are special. Y'all got some different shit going on. Stick to your guns and don't abandon ship. You know what I mean? Because I'm telling you, it's going to come back full circle. And that's exactly what happened, you know what I mean? And now it's like, that's your standard LA trap record, you know what I'm saying? It's just crazy how infectious it was. But how did that feel when you first heard your first beat from somebody else to sound like you could have done it?
How you feel, kid? Me personally, I take it as, you know, because how I look at that is like, you know, when I remember when me and Keys first came in the music game, a lot of our beats sounded like Battle Cat because right. At the time, we, in our mind, we like, he's the standard for, you know, music. West Coast music, us coming up. So we wasn't trying to make beats like Battle Cat, but us not knowing, we were trying to make quality shit, you know? Right. And we didn't end up finding out what type of producers we was until we started growing and actually working with artists, not just sending someone beats. So, you know, I understand going through that because it takes some time to be, you know, it took time to be Bink, you know what I'm saying? And have that sound and, you know, for people to recognize it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like I told Battle Cat to his face, I'm like, man, like we made beats, not you, not trying to copy you, but because we thought that was the hottest shit.
Period.
And it was like that, us learning how to make beats like that got us to Snoop Dogg and Superfly and the people that were really making that was actually making the music, you know. So it took time to grow into, you know, a real producer. I tell you that for sure.
I mean, I tell people all the time, it's like when you first getting your doll or whatever, until you really know how to manipulate that shit totally, you doing what the machine allowing you to do, not really what's in your head. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And then once you really understand how, what to go to what to make it do what, it's like, oh, you know, it's like you do what the hell you want to do now. Like, you know how to manipulate this machine now. So I think we all came in the game sound like somebody, because I thought I was Tribe Called Quest when I first came in the game. Like, I was Q-Tip and Dill. Like, I was a fifth member of Tribe, and you couldn't tell me shit. You know what I mean? Like, I was in the group, nigga. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, but I got to a point where I was like, I can't be content. I can't be comfortable just doing that. You know what I'm saying? What I love, like just regurgitating the music that I love, because that's not my shit. So I just started taking elements from it. Like Q-Tip always had the snare smacking, like all the time. Like the drums always used to be just be smacking, and the sample was always so super clean and, no, so I was just taking those type of things, those type of elements and characteristics from producers that I respected. But the day I think the day the light went on for me is when I listened to Primo. I started really paying attention to Primo and how he was taking smaller pieces of the sample. Opposed to
a full record.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Opposed to just a whole 4-bar loop or 2-bar loop. Like he was like really chopping that bitch up. So, and then I listened to Dilla. I'm like, yo, this nigga Dilla, like, he never used the same drums twice. Like, how? How is he doing this? You know what I'm saying? But then I realized, though, that recycle thing and, you know, chopping up breaks and, you know, you can use any drummer you want to on any given day. You know what I'm saying? So, like, but it take a lot of patience to sit there and be meticulous about what drums you're going to use. Because you can just open your shit up and use the same drums every time. That's easy. You know what I mean? But when I gave y'all them loops,
the vinyl Rex breaks,
yeah, them shits are like, it's like, man, why wouldn't you use it? Like, all these shits sound good. Like, you can use them on something. You ain't got to keep using that 808 snare and that fucking snare with the wood block in it. I won't ever hear that snare again in life. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, said they didn't murder it, huh? They didn't murder it.
God, they burnt that. It's like music to me became like private school. Like everybody came to school just the same. You know what I'm saying? So that's what, uniform. So that's what music became, was like, if you want to make a trap beat, these are the sounds you need. And I was like, no, that's not true.
Right.
So I was glad to hear y'all. You know, I was just trying to inspire y'all to just dig deeper and just set yourself apart from everybody. Like, fuck what everybody else doing and just go, just follow your ear. And y'all niggas figure that shit out. Like, that's for sure. Because just listen
to you. Definitely this. Honest about that. You like, yeah, that's cool and all, but nah, let's hone in on this.
Right.
This is the energy and the vibe. And Nip started noticing it too, like around that time, because you know we was trying to get in a rhythm,
right?
Like, trying to figure out. Remember, Big, we had that song we had did with the Jeremiah and the Dr. Dre shit, and that shit leaked. We had that. We was gonna have Nip. We had a whole plan for the whole thing. You remember that key? We heard that record. Bink did the drums over. We was like, oh, we got a crazy record. It's going to have Nip, Kendrick, Dr. Dre, Jeremiah. And
everybody blamed us for the leak. We like, why would we leak it? Like,
Why would we leak that? Not a chance. But who y'all think that you ain't got it yet that you got your eye on? Like, you sizing up, you really want to try to get in with them. Like, anybody, you know, you checking out?
Man, keep it real. It's Drake, the only person I really want to work with. You know, just based on who he is in our time as an artist. You know,
right?
He's just a big artist, and he just, when I seen him rap on one of your beat and then rap on a premiere beat, I'm like, Drake is different, bro. He's just different, and I respect that. Like, you know, I respect his music. And so, and I know he care about the music because we know where he come from. So that would be the artist that we would want to work with for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when he reached out to me, I was shocked too. Cause you know, I'm like, I didn't think he'd be on that type of time. You know what I mean? As far as the samples and shit like that. So but it took me a while because, you know, I was just sending him stuff, doing beats, send it to him. And finally, that Dosey back joint, he like, this the one.
And that's what I'm saying. He got a good ear to even pick some shit. Like, yeah, just to even pick some shit like that. First of all, ain't nobody going to sample that record and do it that way. You know what I'm saying? So that's he got the golden ear. I hate to say it, but he got the golden ear. Period.
He definitely has a formula that hasn't failed yet. What you say, Keys?
J. Cole on that too, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you got both of them on there. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That was just like so not even playing. I ain't know who's gonna do that, but that I still wanna do another Drake joint though. I'm with y'all on that. Like, I definitely want to do a serious, like, soul joint with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he understand the music, so he going to make it sound official. He going to make it sound official because he's the guy that studied, you know, the blueprints and all them. He studied it. You know what I'm saying? Little Brother, Slum Village, all the shit we love, he studied all that shit. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I get it.
So y'all not deviating from reasons, huh? Everybody try to recruit you on Ableton. Trying to get you to switch over like me.
Yeah, I mean, we've been using Reason for a very long time, and we just like how you mentioned, like, once you know a program and you don't have to think about it, you know what I mean? It's like second nature. So it's why would we switch?
It's crazy because, like I say, people always hear a record and be like, what they use? Somebody buy that shit tomorrow. Like, that don't mean that's how you're gonna sound, champ. Like,
right.
They swore they mastered on that shit. They mastered that. Stick with what you with.
One thing I learned the hard lesson, you know, I remember me and Keith started being around DJ Mustard when he was getting real cracking, right? And we was like, well, shit, we gonna try to do some DJ Mustard shit. And it didn't feel how his felt. And that let me know it's a feeling thing. It ain't, you can try to duplicate, you can try to do the same thing, do it over. It's not gonna feel the same.
because it's not you.
Now that is a fact message.
That's a for sure fact, you know, and I respect that. That's why, and that's what made us go so hard with, you know, with the Nipsey sound, because we like in our heart, this is really our sound. This is what we like to do. We like to use samples and musical shit, but we still like to have bounce on the drums, you know?
I mean, plus y'all surrounded with musicians all the time. So just to have access to Uncle Dave and Rance and Mars.
You know, that really changed our thought process too, because we looking at how they doing shit and we like, ooh, we can do it a whole nother way. Because, you know, the standard thing what producers do is they come in and have someone play something over the beat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll arrange it. But usually we'll have someone come over, play over a beat, and don't even use that, and then mute everything, and then sample it, and, like, take what they played and then sample that.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what really, when we start figuring out the, like, that's what we good at doing. Like, all right, we can't really use this, but we'll take this piece and make it. You know, that's how we met Jeremiah and those type of artists. We was just doing the, you know, the old, like the raw feeling. Remember at that studio you first met us at, Bink, we had
the Grammy joint.
Yeah, the one we had with Bink.
Yeah, the joint with the Rats.
Oh yeah, that
The one with the Rats always the best one though, I ain't gonna lie.
Man, listen, we met everybody in LA at that studio.
Yeah.
Having a studio with Scheme, and like Scheme introduced us to everybody in LA, like all the young people that was really that's cracking right now. We met them through Scheme for sure, no doubt.
Yeah, well, shout out to Angelo, because Angelo brought me through to see y'all.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got to give Angelo a shout out because, you know, Angelo always been about quality music first. So he like, y'all got to meet Bink. That was always his thing. He like, y'all got to meet Bink because you guys care about quality. You know, and Angelo was friends with all the producers. All the guys that we like, Angelo was cool with.
Right.
Every producer. So I'm like, yeah, he care about the quality and he know about what dope shit is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from coming from around Dre and then having to oversee game shit, I think that really, you know what I'm saying, that really got him straight. You know what I'm saying? That really got him right. Plus, T-Fly was in there with y'all, too.
Oh, yeah, T-Fly's in the studio with us, yep. DJ Quick.
See, so he had no choice.
We had the studio with DJ Quick and T-Fly. DJ Quick was probably the best teacher we probably ever had because he's so hands-on. He wants you to know what everything do.
And he really knows what all the equipment does. Each button, he knows everything about everything when it comes to audio.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Quick is definitely a audio geek. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, as gangster as he is, he turned to a geek when they get behind that board.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I really seen Quick do a full song by himself. Write the lyrics, make the beat, mix that shit, do all the shit, you know what I'm saying? That shit was wild to me, like, to see that, you know?
I used to have a Hyundai, man, four-door Hyundai with goddamn every accessory that the goddamn AutoZone had in that bitch in there. Red steering wheels, red on my fucking windshield wipers, and I used to play that Tonight's the Night Quick shit in there so crazy.
That beat is so crazy.
Yeah. Bro, I used to play that shit like my mind was going bad. Like, I love that fucking record.
Yeah.
So I always been a Quick fan. I had a chance to meet him at when he was working at Skip Sellers years ago. And he baited me into a ping pong game. And somebody had the camcorder out and he proceeded to bust my ass on ping pong. he set me up for the ooh wee. But yeah, man, it was just a honor, man, a pleasure to meet him. So I can imagine y'all being around him like every day and like really soaking up game from him like that. It'd be crazy.
Keep it real, Bink. He's the one that showed us how to really record an artist vocally. Right. He showed us how to do it correctly because, you know, like, man, El DeBarge would be at the studio every day in there playing chords and singing like he did it in the 70s. So we seeing how he's recording him. And, like, I remember we have singers, and when we start working with Nip, you know, he used to tell us how we got to record Nip, because recording Nip is going to sound different than recording Jeremiah.
Right.
Recording Jeremiah is going to be different. So there's little texture things as a producer that we learn from Quick is, like, timeless. And then we'll always remember Dr. Dre said DJ Quick gave him the sounds that changed the game for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he anal about quality.
Yeah.
I mean, bro, people don't understand, like, I was DJing with Scratch one night. I mean, I'm sorry, Rich Medina. And when I went on before him, and then when he came on after me, it sounded like he had a whole nother set in there. Like, he had bought new speakers. And I was like, bro, like, what did you do so different? He was just like, yo, all my songs are waves.
Hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So it's, when you don't, if you can't A-B something, you can't really understand what you're missing until you put them side by side. You know what I mean? And then it really shows you, like, God damn, like, I got to step my shit up. Like, it was just crazy to hear his songs coming on that heavy and that clean and that loud on the same shit I just came off of. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, music is like a bong. You get out what you put in. You know what I'm saying? You put in some bullshit drum sounds, and with so much you can do in the mix to get that bitch to come out crazy on the other side. You know what I mean? So you got a dope-ass kick drum. It can only be great from here. You know what I'm saying? And that's Quick. Anything Quick is putting in is just so high quality.
Quality, yeah.
That the sound at the end of the game is going to be so stupid because everything is A1.
And a lot of people don't know Quick mixed the All Eyes on Me album.
That part, I found out later.
You know what I'm saying? So that's a high sonic album. You know what I'm saying? So we always was like, man, you know, me and Keys learned the hard way, you know, using reasons. You know, we came in the game when hardware kind of went out of style, you know?
Right.
So when we didn't understand what Angelo was telling us about, like our drums hitting, but he like, they not hitting. And we used to get offended.
Yeah, he said they
we used to get so offended, Bink, like early, like Angelo used to kill us with the mix. So we used to go in like trying to prove ourselves on how to make our drums sound good. So when people hear our drums and Reason, now that's from us trying to compete. I'll never forget, man, Scoop DeVille came in and played some beats. Keys, you remember, right?
Yeah.
Scoop DeVille came in. I'll never forget that Scoop DeVille came and played some beats. You know, we fresh in L.A. You know what I'm saying? He using NPC. He using the vinyl off the record, and he had did that Snoop record. He had did like 5 records at this time. And he had played us those records, Bink, and it was like me and Keys looked at each other like, our shit don't sound like that.
It's hitting different.
It's hitting different, and that's when we knew what Angelo was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, damn. You need that person besides, because when I first started, me and Knots were down together. We was in a crew called Teamsters. You know what I'm saying? So to get with him sometime and hear his shit, it's like, God damn. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, what the hell am I not doing right? Like, what? Hold up, I gotta rethink this shit. Know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you need that person that can, you know, they can slap you around, you know, and respectfully. And show you, you know what I'm saying, and really just point out to you without even pointing out to you what you're missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So that was dope that you had Quick, and, you know, what was that, Scoop DeVille, whatever the fuck, like, quality guys. Like, every time all of us hear Battlecast, like, yo, Battlecast on
Facebook. Man.
All right, come on.
I still to this day go and look at all the beats of Battle Cat making beats, you know, video of him making beats, and that shit just like, because people forget his chord game is through the roof. His chord game is through the roof.
That's a Cali thing though, because not realizing that Parliament is from Cali. You know what I'm saying? And just all that stuff they did was, like, insane. Like, the chords that they played, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, knee deep. Like, come on, bro. Like,
that's one of the craziest beats ever.
Ever. To even think of that shit. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
That's like, one of the craziest beats ever.
I got the session on that shit.
Crazy.
The session?
I got the Pro Tools session. I got to send you the session. Yeah, I got the session.
Oh, my God, to that. Because there's so much shit going on.
So much. And the crazy shit is when you solo just certain instruments,
it's
you don't
ridiculous.
Even realize. You don't even realize it's in the record because everything is working together so crazy.
Wow.
Creating something together. You know what I mean? So
I ain't going to lie, bro. I've tried to sample that so many times, and it's just – it never was right.
I got the section for us. I already got it. We're gonna go ahead and knock that shit out. I got it. I promise you, I got the section already.
We need and to you know, we that. You know, me and Keys had we was blessed to work with George Clinton.
Yeah,
in the studio, and that shit was wild, bro. Cause you know we going in thinking like we gonna do some funky shit. He like, man, keep it real with y'all. I'm on. He was like at the time. He like we was like, what you listening to? He like to keep it real. I'm listening to Chief Keef. He like that shit gutter.
What?
I'm dead serious.
Oh yeah, he said that. He said Chief
like,
Keef.
I'm on Chief Keef. Fuck that old nigga shit. He's like, I'm on the young nigga shit. I'm like, and that's why you're George Clinton. That's what makes you who you are because you understand, you know, music changes and, you know, it goes in circles and there's going to be new things that go on because when I look at it, Chief Keef changed the game.
Yeah.
He changed the game for these he created a new blueprint for these kids. So for George Clinton to understand that, that was major.
I think that was the creation of drill.
Yeah, for sure. Like the flow, how did it bounce? Because people used to think drill rappers were off. Nah, it was just a new flow.
I mean, they were off. Look, I ain't gonna front. They were off. But the beat was like still like a lot slower than we was used to hearing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then old boy came out. What's all go everything? What's the dude's name?
Crazy. I forgot his name.
Can't think of his name. He be writing the records. I be seeing his name on a lot of records.
Bro, I'm trying to tell you,
bro,
he changed the game.
He's writing on a lot of records.
He changed the game because around that time, trap music was like the average, like one, like in the 130s and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came in at 100.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Half speed, though. Like, Mustard is a true 100.
Yeah, he's a true 100. Right, yeah.
You see what I'm saying? He's a true 100.
Yeah.
Right. But old boy won 100 double time. That's dumb slow when you think about it.
Yeah.
That's really like 50 BPM.
Absolutely. That's actually a ballad. That's a ballad.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like a thugged out ballad. Think like that's. It's like people don't pay attention to those type of these, because that's how I really learned how to approach the trap shit. Because I'm like, yo, the trap shit, basically the kick is in the same spot that you would program a ballad. It's all the shit in between that make it make sense. All the hi-hats and snares and like,
yeah,
that's what y'all be killing me with. Like you and my man from 808 Mafia.
Oh, he's the legend of that. He's the legend of it. Southside, he changed the hi-hat game on, like, he started treating the hi-hat like a melody.
Hi-hat game was like everything.
Me and Keys used to talk about that. Man, I ain't gonna lie, when Southside and Lex Luger came in the game, bro, we felt the change, Bink. Like, that, when the trap beats that they were doing, it was different, bro. It was different.
I mean, first of all, that was the birth of distorted 808s too.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, actually, on purpose, distorted 808s became the thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because it gave you that over-exaggerated knock. You know what I mean? Like, when you listen to BMF and MC Hammer and shit like that, like, you can hear that, you can hear those 808s on a laptop speaker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is not normal. normally, you know, 808 just be like,
boom, yeah,
it's the popping noise, like you don't hear shit, you know what I mean? But now we mix them shits where you can hear them shit like any other instrument. Like, it's just crazy how far we've come as far as with
how music, we mix our
music. Yeah,
man, that's why I give the kids so much credit, because you know they have limited sound, so they have to do tricky shit with the 808. They got to do, you know what I'm saying? So there was a lot of different 808s. Man, Pierre Bourne changed the game with that 808.
Who's that?
Pierre, he all that
Playboy Cardi.
Playboy Cardi and all that music. Okay. That everybody uses that 808 in their beats.
Yeah,
everybody.
Yeah. So that's the same 808 Drake used on Scorpion.
Yes, that's Pierre Bourne. That's
exactly.
He's the one that made that pop, that particular 808 popular.
I mean, I think that's the best advice I ever got from an engineer. And he was like, yo, fuck the meters. Get it to how you like it.
Yeah.
And then we'll deal with the meters.
Yeah, that's DJ Quick used to say that shit too. He used to be like, stop looking at it and feeling it. Stop looking at the levels and shit. Like, your ear will tell you if it's right. Fuck the levels.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And once I got that game in my head, I was like, oh, okay. I'm all right. You know what I'm saying? I just learned that you can hit open the red, you just can't stay there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It can go over there. It just can't, the meter just can't be like this though. Like, just over there like this. Just, you know what I mean? Just hard right.
You and Alchemist are the only people that ever told us, like, don't give them a two-track of your drums and let them mix everything else. Because, you know, man, and since we've been doing that, our shit been sounding like how we made it.
I mean, sometimes let's talk about that, though, because for real, that's what's wrong with music right there. Because at the end of the day, you should allow the producer to mix his own record anyway. Or let him at least have him be a part of it. Don't right. just send this whole record to somebody who wasn't a part of the process.
Yeah.
Because they're going to mix it to how they hear it. And we don't care about how they hear it. Because we want that shit to knock better than what the rough was. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep.
So, like, when the people that really keep the producer involved in that whole process, it should always come out better.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It always comes out better. You know what I'm saying? Because you allow him to walk that dog, you know what I'm saying, to the corner and back rather than just, you know, okay, we got your beat now, we won't need you no more. It's like, nah, that's not true. Like, I want him to be a part of that mix to make sure that, because you know for yourself, it's been beats that you've done and you lost, you redid it and couldn't get that bitch back. You like,
man. You called us on a couple of records, like, yo, it didn't sound like the way I heard it. Like, and it's like, man. You know, sometimes you take the energy, the feeling of that feeling thing we was talking about.
Yeah.
A mix can take that feeling away, or it can make it better. It just depends on if you're there. Right. Like thank God, like when we mixed Nip's album with Ali, every beat that got done, even if we didn't do the beat, we hit the producer up and be like, bro, listen, Ali's about to mix your record. And just before we change it or change the sounds or do anything, you want to make sure you do it before we do it so you can be a part of your record and you know what the kick sound like. Because sometimes, you're right, the engineer is going to do what he hears unless you be like, nah, this is how the kick was.
Listen, one thing I remember for me coming up, the main question during the mix at all times is play the rough.
Right.
It's like, yo, play the rough and let's see where we at with it. You know what I'm saying? And back then, a lot of the seasoned engineers would bring in a boom box with them and put that on the top of the console as well beside the NS10s. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. We'll always play it on that shit first. And then there was another speaker on the 2-inch machine that they would check the mix on as well, which is basically the same effect those Oratone speakers have. You know what I'm saying? Yep. It's real flat. It represents your average clock radio or your average person car radio sound. So if you got it knocking on that, it's going to knock everywhere. It don't matter. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the type of things that are missing from music. Just that whole relationship between the engineer and the producer.
Producer. And the artist too, because you know, it obviously you can see who's successful consistently in the music. They follow that formula. They all follow that formula. All the guys that are consistently successful, Kendrick, Drake, J. Cole, yeah. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? It's just consistent.
It's consistent. They always got the same guy overseeing everything with the producer, and that's people don't understand that's pivotal. That shit is pivotal, bro. Like, literally. Mm-hmm. But this detox is killing me, man. You hear me?
Yeah, you said you ain't no marijuana and no chicken.
Bruh, this detox is
That's like a nigga kryptonite, huh? No chicken and weed.
But yo, I tell you something I never forget though, man. Like, this shit broke my heart. But that day they put us out of that studio, bruh.
Man. Remember we came, you was there, me and Keys had got there and we was like, yo, Bink, we gotta leave. He was like, come on, we gotta leave. We gotta get out of here now. It's over. They want us out the studio. That's the first time I ever seen Nipsey like damn near about to cry. Cause we just was getting comfortable in that studio.
It was just so much good music being done in there, man. Like, it was just, yeah, we had a system going. You know what I mean? Like, they had the right people coming through every day. Yeah. And you know what I'm saying? It was just there were all the right elements. It was a lot of moving parts to that spot.
Little Buddy being there. We used to murder Buddy. That's why I knew Buddy was going to be something, because he took all our beating. Us, Nip, you, everybody. So I'm like, Buddy wanted.
Yeah, he didn't care.
He as took the beating, Bink. Like, the you melody, know the old school rap. You said what?
I said, as long as that shit had a beat and a melody, Buddy was gone.
Yeah, he was gone.
It's like, bullshit. Like, he put that shit on, he just started rapping. It didn't even matter. Yeah. He's gonna do a song with that bitch. It don't matter.
And that shit inspired us because we like, damn, you know, Buddy was the youngest one out of everybody. So he coming in like, I don't care what's going on. Where's the beats? I was just trying to record.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what his energy like. Yo, player, just play anything. I don't care. I'm gonna murder whatever. Get this shit out today, right now. You know what I'm saying? But that's how you make music, man. People don't understand. Though, some people just do way too much thinking. Say, bro, you always got the erase button. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You always got the erase button. You can always erase it and redo it. You don't have to. It don't have to be perfect right now. You know what I'm saying? We can work our way to perfection. You know what I'm saying? So that was like one of the main things I kept, you know, telling Nip back then, like, yo, Nip, bro. You don't have to change the sound no more. Like, basically, the people is waiting on you. Like, and you got Mike and Keys is just sound. Just go with that. Like, people waiting on y'all. Like, y'all got it. You ain't got to question this shit no more.
Mm-hmm.
And once he did that, it was just like, man.
And you know, Nip is a real... What nobody don't know about Nip is a rapper's rapper and a producer, meaning like he really knows history. He know every beat you made, he know every beat Ninth Wonder made, he know every beat DJ Premier made.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Nip was one of the first people to work with Violence. You know what I'm saying? Murder Beats, all these great producers that people don't, they wouldn't know that. You know what I'm saying? Nip worked with Drake early, Party Next Door. Like he had the ear. For the music, he just didn't have his team, you know. You know, Lawrence was the person there always pushing Nip to the edge of like, man, you just got to record to the music, you know. And once Nip started recording to the music, that's when he started changing as an artist. Like what you just said, he stopped overthinking it.
Right. And stopped trying to find something in particular and just let the music lead him. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I said when he called me, he was like, yo, you want me to just come in and just help out, whatever. That shit meant everything because it's very rare that somebody would give me that type of respect and just it made me feel appreciated to that degree. So it was like, you know, I knew he was going to be great just because he just understood people. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he understood what he was trying to attain.
And just, I think, you know, to be honest with you, you know, before, like, we knew you was coming through to the studio. Nip just had a respect for you. You know what I'm saying? The music that you've done. So that's why I go back and say that's why he's a producer, rapper, because he really respects, you know, what we talk about, what we come from, paying homage. Like, even if you and it did one song, he had a lot of respect to be like, damn, I got Bink here. That's how Nip was thinking, like, nigga, I got Bink here.
Yeah, you know, the first time I met Nip was in New York when he was with, what's your boy named, Johnny?
Oh,
Johnny Shipes.
Shipes, yeah.
And I met him at that apartment. They had this apartment in New York with a studio in it. I was like, man, this shit ain't gonna last. There's no way this shit gonna last. Like, they in the building with other people that's living there, you know what I'm saying? And this shit banging out, just blowing it down. I said, there's no way this shit gonna last. And sure enough, it didn't. But that was the first time I had met Nip, and that's when Nip was like super active, you know what I'm saying, with the Cali scene. He was like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, super he was crypt. Really Nipsey Hussle's.
Yeah, he was super cripped out. And we didn't have the connection at that time. But, you know, I had a friend of mine down here named Treasy. And he asked me about him, but like, yo, you what you know about Nipsey? And I was like, I don't really know enough about him to comment. So we had to go to New York, 6-hour trip. And he played Nip the whole way up there. And that was it. That's all I needed to hear after that.
How did Nip get that beat from you?
I came up and I went to Inglewood to the 1500 spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled that beat up to Respect Your Passion, right?
Yeah, Respect Your Passion, yeah.
Yeah, I pulled that beat up in there and he went right in. You know what I'm saying? I still got the picture from that night. But yeah, man, it was like, oh, shout out to my man Mark too. My man Mark Infinite had bought me that sample, that chop, and I just, you know, I changed everything else up around it. But that definitely started our musical journey. Well, never myself.
Cause I'm like, where, you know me, I'm like, where, how you get this beat from Bink? You got a beat from Bink and Ninth Wonder. You know, I'm like, where'd this come from?
When they say real, recognize real, man, that's one of the realest statements ever. You know what I'm saying? As far as, you know, when you meet somebody and it's just like when I met y'all, like when the energy is right and the respect is mutual, I can't really see nothing negative happen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just sure. a great situation because I always told y'all from the beginning, I said, I really feel like I can learn from y'all just as much as you feel like you can learn from me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In the beginning. Sure. You know what I'm saying? Because I was it was a new wave coming. And, you know, I'm from the old school. So y'all was really the masters or out front, the leaders of the new school, if you will. So I'm like, yeah, let me just stick close to these niggas because I need to soak up some games. So being out there with y'all for that month and some changes was pivotal for me to just be able to, you know, sit around and just learn and just soak up game like that.
And remember, we had the studio just being built, so we just all getting kind of comfortable all at the same time. Remember, the studio had just literally got built, like up and running.
And then old boy, what's my man name? Engineer Nip at the spot.
Oh, G.
G.
Then G laced me up with so much software, bro.
Oh, man, yeah. G, listen, I'm going to tell you this. G, Nipsey's engineer, G, has saved a lot of producers' lives. Let me tell you this. From saving their computer to, mm-hmm. you know, files, sounds, everything. I've seen him save some lives. You know when you get your, you know when you get your new computer, you gotta go sit with G. Period.
That's a fact. Like I will go sit with G again when I get out there again. Like just, I know he got some shit I don't know about. You know what I'm saying? But he from VA too, right?
100% from VA. He rep it to the fullest.
So that's what I'm saying. So it was just great to see another one of my, you know, Virginia brothers up here, like getting it and just being, you know, respected for what he brings to the table. It's just dope to see, man. Cause, you know, Virginia just, we never really had that visual camaraderie. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and we so deep though. You know what I'm saying? Like, imagine if we were just as tight as the Dungeon family. Like, yeah. how that shit would look.
Yeah, it's just spread. It's just everybody got their sound and spread out.
Yeah, everybody just spread out. But if we all like was together, like we've never all been in one picture.
That would be an epic picture.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
there's a lot of y'all.
A lot of us, bro. Like,
you know, that used to be an argument. Like, you know, like, we don't know what's in the water in Virginia, but man, it's like the music that comes out of there is different. Cause like we just said when we talking about Lex Luger, Bink, when that beat dropped, we never heard nothing like that before.
Nah.
Never. When it dropped at that time, we were like, what? Remember Keys? We were like, what is this? We went and like literally downloaded every beat Lex Luger did at that time. And was like, what is he, like, why is it sound so banging? Like, he's doing this in Fruity Loops. The 808 is so loud. Everything is so loud. It's like, man.
Crazy.
He mixed it how he heard it. And that's why I say, like, the number one rule in music is not to have none.
It's not to have no rule, yeah.
No rules, yeah.
No rules.
That's the number one rule. It's not to have none. So when you that free, with your creativity, it's like you don't put yourself in a box. It's like, man, that shit sound good to me. That's all that matters. Let's roll with that. That's it. I don't question shit else.
Right.
You know? And that's what I wish that more young kids would adapt to, because they put themselves in a box so crazy because they thinking that they got to sign the record that just went off. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, you just got to do what you feel.
You just got to do what you feel, but people go buy somebody's album and be like, oh, that's the new wave now. And that's what they run with. It's like, no. That's not necessarily what you got to do. Pay attention, but that's not necessarily what you got to resort to. But at the same time, you got A&Rs that come to you and ask you for particular shit.
Yeah.
I need one of these.
Messes up your whole creative.
Once someone says, I need an up-tempo or anything like that, I think when people make records, I think there is a lot of intentions, but when you just asking people for records, there's no intentions in that. That's just, you're asking people for records and hoping you find something out that batch. That's not really making a record and doing something.
It's not organic. You know what I'm saying? Because people don't understand, it doesn't matter how fast a record is. You just need a good record.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whether it's fast, mid, or slow, whatever it is, it just needs to be a solid record. Because I tell people all the time, beats don't sell records. Songs do.
Right. Yeah.
That's true.
This beat could be trash.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We heard it a few times. A beat that was like, but the song was like, wow.
Yeah.
Need a joint. So it's like, you know, we just need to find a great record and, you know, and run with that. But how long was it after you was working with Dom before you got the Nip?
It was around the same time, right?
Time, yeah. I mean, we knew Dom before, we worked with Dom before Nip. But we started working consistently with Nip and Dom at the same time. So, like, if you look at the time period, we did Get Home Safely and Crenshaw at the same time because they came out in the same week.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Casey Veggie's Life Changes. So, that was three projects we did all at one time. And T-Fly shit.
What is up with T-Fly? Where is T-Fly, bro?
To be honest with you, I don't really know. You know, T-Fly is like, you know, he's always going to be good because he's so talented. He's just, you know, he got to be in the right energy, the right people,
Yeah.
Because T-Fly had, you know, in 2013, 2014, he changed the R&B game.
Oh, you ain't got to tell me. I heard that R&B at the – when y'all was at the other spot. What was the other spot y'all was at that was like in a courtyard type thing? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, you're talking about in Santa Monica upstairs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
West Hollywood? Was it West Hollywood?
Yeah, it was in West Hollywood, yeah.
Yeah, and T-Fly had a spot right across from y'all.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
I used to hear that nigga shit banging out the door. He used to have that door open all the time.
Yeah.
I used to be like, yo, this dude right here, like, his court, just the chords he chose.
And people don't really, really know about T-Fly. People don't know that, you know, T-Fly is one of the originators of, you know, the dance moves a lot of these artists do. You know, the Chris Browns, all of them, you know.
Hold on, T-Fly dance?
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a movie on T-Fly. What's the movie called, Keys?
It's called, what's it called?
T-Fly's in that one movie with Chris Brown, too, Bink.
What?
He's in Stomp the Yard. If you go look at the movie, T-Fly's in the movie.
T-Fly's in Stomp the Yard.
They say that movie is about T-Fly.
I'm done.
This is like, it's like real LA history. It's not even you. The crunk dancing, all that shit. That's that T-Fly and all them was doing that. Like T-Fly really did. Like his family, they special. Like they different.
But I hear it. He saw he come from a whole like a gospel background.
Yeah, he was the minister of music for the church at like 14. Playing the organ, doing everything like wild. Like
yeah, he's
that's why I said I literally seen T-Fly change the dynamics of how you approach an R&B record.
I can hear it though, bro.
Like, you know, Mustard loved T-Fly so much because he like, man, I ain't never really heard no one just sing over my beat like that. And that changed the whole, you know, now you can sing over this beat, which no one was never really thinking about doing because everybody was really still doing, you know, the traditional R&B.
No, I hear the T-Fly influence in Mustard's music for sure. Like for sure, for sure. Like, it was like I said, just his chords over top the 808s is just like wow.
And then you know figure out how to do a song over it.
Right. Then his backgrounds and all that, his harmonies, like it was just like, wow, this dude is like underrated. Like people should know more about T-Fly than what they do.
And to T-Fly's defense, you know, T-Fly put out two hit records, you know? And one of them, when he was on Epic, you know, he had with 2 Chainz and, remember Bobby Shmurda went to jail, so they fired everybody from Epic at that time. So T-Fly was on the roster, so.
Damn it.
You know what I'm saying? So that kind of changed a lot of the things. They let a lot of the artists go from the roster.
Matter of fact, when I came to y'all at that first building with Rats at, with Lowe, he played me T-Fly. Y'all played me T-Fly that weekend. And I went back to, I came back to Virginia. I was just like, I couldn't stop thinking about the music. Then like a couple of months later, I was like, yo, I want to try to get this nigga a deal. Like, what's up, Lowe? What's up with your man? He couldn't find him, remember?
Yeah, oh yeah.
He couldn't find, I said, bro, I'm gonna take him to somebody. And bro, nobody can find T-Fly.
Listen, when Nip got a hold of T-Fly, Nip started putting T-Fly on all the songs. You can go back and look.
I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you hear somebody that adds value to your music, like, Dre them never gave a damn about Nate Dogg doing every hook. They didn't care. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, he on 4 records, so what? Now people be like, man, we can't use him again, man. He already did a record for us. Like, what that? So what does that mean? So right. it's just, you know what I mean? It's just different. But neither one of y'all play drums in church or like that?
I think Mike did.
Mike, you played drums in church?
Yeah, I did. I played drums in church my whole life.
The truth comes out.
Yeah, my dad, man, he used to be on me about, you know, just, he used to be on me about it. Just pocket, like, hey, you know, especially at church, he used to be like, nah, pocket got to be right.
What's your dad play?
My dad played the bass.
You say your dad was like 6'8"?
Yeah, now he like six. He like six. It's like 6'6", 6'5", 6'6".
And they gotta be a sight to see it. Well, he probably sat down and played bass.
Yeah, he's. But yeah, he cared. Like he's the one. He cared. My dad was the one that like put me up on all the gospel artists, and like I like as a kid. I went to every gospel thing you can think of, Canton Spirituals. Where's the Canton? Thank you. I went to every gospel event you can think of as a kid, being from the Williams Brothers, Canton Spirituals, the Christianaires. Like, I was really there as a kid. So that's when I started really figuring out, you know, vibe and pocket. That's really where I started learning. Because my Williams dad loved that. All the quartets, yeah. All the quartet groups. Like, my uncle was is a big-time gospel promoter in Louisiana, so he got the best gospel, you know, in the early 90s to come to Louisiana, so I got to see that as a kid and really, you know, be tapped into that. So that's really where a lot of the music came from, for sure.
But how epic was it to be in a, you know, you be from a little church, and then on quartet dudes coming there with those big ass guitar amps, with the leather shit around it.
Man, be ready to go.
Like epic, like I mean, the Southerners and Crusaders and all types of people, you know, from my area, it's just so different to, you know, to hear that, because it sounds just like R&B. But gospel.
Yeah, it's got, yeah, exactly. I mean, if you listen to a lot of John P. Key was one of the first gospel producers, I mean, gospel artists to really infuse a lot of gap band with, you know, you'll hear right. them chords in the music with it, and, you know, it's just the words that have changed. So I always was intrigued with that. Like, there was a church in Sacramento that I heard that Keys went to, I think it was called Genesis, right?
Yeah.
And they flipped like a D'Angelo, My Lady, but did it in a church way. And it sounds so crazy. You know what I'm saying? I was just like, I always was intrigued with that. That was like my intro to like sampling, because I didn't really know what sampling was. That was like what I thought sampling was. Like, oh, they freaked that and made it into something, you know?
What year you think that was?
That had to have been like 95, 96.
That's crazy. That's where Kirk Franklin got it from then.
Yeah, I mean, they say the Godfather is James Cleveland. Then they say it's John P. Key, and then, you know, whoever else from there. That's what I was told.
No, I was talking about as far as incorporating old R&B records, melodies.
Oh, yeah. I definitely would have to say John P. Key, because all his earlier catalog of music had that. Or maybe, I'd have to say Rance Allen.
I'm not familiar with him. I got to look him up.
You don't know about Rance Allen?
Oh, yeah. He's one of the pioneers.
Oh, my God, Bink. He's actually the originator. It's like Rance Allen and James Cleveland. You know, the church people, that's some argument shit. But
I know all about James Cleveland. He had a raspy voice. He had a super raspy voice.
But Rance Allen, yeah, he got like
there's drum breaks that people have used from his record. There's a popular drum break that people have used off his record.
What?
You definitely heard it before.
You've definitely heard it before.
Mm-hmm. No, Rance Allen. I mean, not Lil Rance, but Rance Allen.
No, Rance Allen, yeah. He's, yeah, his catalog, Bink, is crazy.
Yeah.
His catalog is crazy.
So what was y'all first record ever?
Well, me, I had a song with 50 Cent. That was like my first introduction to the music industry.
Which one is that?
It was on his last album that he had with Interscope, Before I Self-Destruct. You remember that album?
Yeah.
I had the song called Hold Me Down. That was like my first placement ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Just sending out beats to people, and 50 got a hold of it. So it was basically just luck. You know, yeah. Yeah.
50. And what was yours, Mike?
First song I ever did was with this artist from Paris. Was it France? He was like the 50 Cent of Paris back then. His name was Booba.
Booba.
Yeah. He was like the biggest artist, you know. When I started producing, one of the guys I started working with, he was from France. So, you know, that was like my first introduction to like, yo, like this song is official, you know?
It's a big difference in the money over there, boy.
Yeah.
Like the way what producers getting paid now is what Paris would try to pay you 20 years ago.
The budgets was different.
The budgets was super tight.
How you feel about the budget game and everything now and what's going on? You think the labels don't want to spend money because the kids, the music is so accessible now?
Yeah, I think
they're not really clearing music. I feel like they're not really clearing music, for real.
I think labels are definitely preying on the ignorance of the kids. Mm. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because when you're dealing with somebody who don't know their worth, that's golden for you.
They take a full advantage of that.
Total. And they'd rather have a placement.
Because they're new.
Right. So it's like, I always tell people, like, you know, I see so many guys, like, say, like, yo, you know, I just gave my beats away, you know, because I just wanted to record. I'm like, you can record, but I ain't giving you shit. You know what I mean? Like, right. I heard Zaytoven say that a lot of times, like, yo, I just gave my beats away, like, you know, because I'm trying to get on. I'm like, that's not cool to me. I feel like, your music is worth something, regardless of what it is or how early you started. But you deserve to get paid something. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Right.
I mean, it's bad enough. There's no money on the back end anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because of streaming. So the whole mechanical thing is just gone. You know what I mean? Like the per unit shit, like, that's over. So you have nothing else to look forward to outside of the producer fee.
So, and the producer fee is low.
That's what I'm trying to say. So why would I allow you to pay me fucking $1,000 when that's all I'm getting?